Remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Spain has become the third country to surpass China in the number of cases of coronavirus behind the United States and Italy. More than 6,000 new cases were confirmed Monday, with 812 deaths. Spanish authorities put the country on lockdown 2 weeks ago to try to stop the rapid spread of the virus. The tactic has been used by governments all over the world, including new restrictions Monday in Moscow, allowing people to only leave their homes for essential jobs, shopping, or food or medicine, also for medical emergencies. In his daily remarks, World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said that specific attention should be given to low- and middle-income countries in Africa, Asia, and Latin America when discussing the movement of essential health products. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari announced stay-at-home orders for the country's capital and its largest city, and said that travel to and from other parts of the country should be avoided. Authorities in Zimbabwe ordered a three-week lockdown starting Monday, while similar measures in Nepal, Slovenia, and Argentina are being extended. In the United States, which has the most cases worldwide, the state of New York has passed the somber milestone of 1,000 deaths. U.S. President Donald Trump announced U.S. guidelines on social distancing to prevent the virus from spreading, and that would be extended to the end of April. Italy, which has by far the most deaths and has been under strict lockdown for weeks, reported more than 750 more deaths Sunday. We saw signs of hope with a lockdown and a slowdown in new infections. An Italian government official told Italy's Sky TG24 television that while everyone wants to return to life as usual, talking about such a move at this point is inappropriate. This is VOA News. The United Nations top envoy for Syria warned Monday that the coronavirus could be a new calamity for the war-torn country and that a nationwide ceasefire must be implemented immediately. The special envoy, Geir Pedersen, told the UN Security Council in a virtual meeting that the pandemic demands a complete shift in mindset to see the virus as a major threat against all Syrians. Syria has officially confirmed 10 cases of the respiratory illness caused by the new coronavirus and one death. There is no data available on how widely or whether the government is testing people. Pedersen said that there is a high risk that authorities will be unable to contain the pandemic due to high levels of population movements and overcrowding in displaced persons' camps and detention facilities. There is also a severe shortage of health professionals and the necessary medical equipment and supplies. UN Humanitarian Chief Mark Lowcock told council members that given the virus's trajectory in other countries, Syria's 10 reported cases are only the tip of the iceberg. Russia tightened controls aimed at combating the spread of the coronavirus on Monday, with Moscow introducing temporary quarantine measures and the Kremlin moving to extend the lockdown nationwide. The new restrictions came as President Vladimir Putin discussed the coronavirus, among other issues, with President Donald Trump in a phone call that the Kremlin insisted was at Washington's request. Conversation came as Putin made clear he recognized the growing threat of the COVID-19 outbreak. He appeared for his second televised national address on the issue Monday afternoon. With a new sense of urgency, the new tone came as government task force said that suspected cases of COVID-19 had swelled past the 1,800 mark with 9 deaths, numbers that continue to place Russia far lower than other global coronavirus hotspots. Under new rules that went into effect Sunday, the vast majority of Moscow's 15 million inhabitants now face a blanket home isolation quarantine, with exceptions for trips to local supermarkets and pharmacies, as well as walking pets or taking out trash. Officials in Afghanistan said Monday that at least 21 security forces were killed, and the latest Taliban attacks and a planned prisoner swap with the insurgent group has been delayed yet again. The deadliest violence occurred in the northern Tukhar province, where Taliban fighters assaulted several government outposts. A provincial government spokesman told VOA that the raid killed 14 Afghan forces and a civilian. The latest violence comes as a spokesman for the Afghan National Security Council confirmed that a long-awaited prisoner swap process, which was supposed to start on Tuesday, has been delayed. That swap is one of the key provisions in the U.S.-Taliban agreement signed on February 29th, requiring Kabul to release up to 5,000 insurgent prisoners in exchange for 1,000 detainees. I'm Tommy McNeil via remote.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 31st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe on Monday began a 21-day lockdown to stop the spread of the coronavirus.
In about 2 months' time, winter will be upon us, creating conditions ideal for more infections. We thus need to take decisive measures now against the pandemic.
Thus, President Emmerson Mnangagwa of Zimbabwe. South African security struggled to enforce a lockdown in some parts of the country. Health officials in Sudan are worried as some people escape from quarantine areas. Nigeria's two main cities prepare to go into a lockdown. People in Ghana's major cities are waking to the second day of coronavirus lockdown. And a contentious confirmation hearing yesterday for the next chair of Liberia's National Elections Commission.
Let me submit again that I am a citizen of Liberia. The question of my citizenship has been settled in the Supreme Court opinion that admitted me to Supreme Court bar.
And an overcrowded prison population in Cameroon is vulnerable to coronavirus infection. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe on Monday began a 21-day lockdown to try to stop the spread of the coronavirus. Healthcare advocates and the business community are generally supportive, but have aired concerns that they say the government needs to address. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
We are worried that even as our numbers remain low, there is possibility of wider community spread and transmissions. Further, in about 2 months' time, winter will be upon us, creating conditions ideal for more infections. We thus need to take decisive measures now against the pandemic.
That is President Emmerson Mnangagwa speaking on state television over the weekend, justifying the lockdown aimed at containing the spread of the COVID-19, which began Monday. So far, there are only 9 confirmed cases of the virus in Zimbabwe and only 1 death. But to keep the numbers down, the government is requiring people to stay in their homes for the next 3 weeks, except when buying food and other essentials. Schools are shut down, as are most businesses. Speaking via WhatsApp, Fortune Nyamande, the chairman of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights, welcomed the lockdown. However, he said the lockdown needs to be supplemented by increased efforts to detect COVID-19 cases.
The lockdown on its own is not a panacea to solving the COVID-19 pandemic. The lockdown needs to be supplemented by additional measures such as increased case detection, increased community surveillance, and also, as you are aware, only less than 200 people have been tested for coronavirus in Zimbabwe, and these are very low and pathetic figures. So for us to effectively contain this outbreak during the lockdown, let's test more people.
The country's businesses owners will be in a tough spot during the next 3 weeks, with most deprived of income. Sam Wadzai is from the Vendors Initiative for Social and Economic Transformation in Zimbabwe. Via WhatsApp, he explains the vendor's dilemma.
This lockdown is only in the best interest of this country. After all, we have to be united to fight this deadly virus. But at the same time, we also encourage the government to ensure that they put in place support mechanisms to continue to be, so that people are able to continue to survive during this lockdown period. We expect this to be done as quickly as possible so that people don't die of hunger.
President Mnangagwa was expected to meet with business owners Monday to discuss their concerns over loss of revenue during the 21-day lockdown. So far, the government has made no guarantees of financial support. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
South Africa is in its second week of a 21-day nationwide lockdown to try to slow the spread of COVID-19.
Science has shown that the best way to do this is to limit contact between humans as much as possible. The government is allowing certain services it deems to be essential, such as food stores, to remain open. But large gatherings of people are banned and citizens have been urged to remain indoors. However, in some areas, security forces are struggling to enforce the regulations. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
I have confidence in the people of South Africa that they are going to abide by the restrictions that we have placed on their lives in order to save their lives.
President Cyril Ramaphosa addressed troops ahead of their deployment last Friday. He asked the police and soldiers to show restraint when enforcing the COVID-19 rules.
This is not a moment for skit and donner.
Skit and donner are the Afrikaans words for shoot and beat up. But over the weekend, the security forces were firing rubber bullets at groups of people roaming the streets of central Johannesburg. In some places, fist fights erupted as police pushed residents inside their homes. One of the flashpoints was Alexandra Township. This man says, "It's unfair of the government to expect us to be imprisoned in our shacks all day, every day. We haven't got nice homes like the rich people. I tried to leave my place to buy food and the soldiers would not let me through." The state locked the country down just before millions of South Africans got paid or received social grants. So crowds descended on grocery stores. A perfect way to spread the virus, says Community Safety Minister for Gauteng Province, Faith Mazibuko.
There's no compliance in relation to social distance, especially at the malls, and those that defy and want to open their taverns. We've got news for them. Is that the Gauteng provincial...
Indeed, for many across Johannesburg, it was fun and not food that was the priority. And they broke the law to party at bars and nightclubs. The police arrested several entertainment venue owners who refused to close their businesses.
Where is the owner? The owner must come with us.
At a media briefing, Provincial Police Commissioner General Elias Mawela said some people just didn't seem to understand the gravity of the situation.
We have put behind bars 148 people who decided not to obey the regulations, and we will continue to stamp the authority of the state.
But some, like the people packing this club in the suburb of Westbury, did not appear afraid of that authority.
Funny lockdown begin dit. Lyk dit soos 'n delay.
And partygoer Andrew October summarized the fatalism that the COVID-19 epidemic is inspiring among some South Africans. "Damn this lockdown," he said. "I'm going to get my kicks before I get that China virus." I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 31st. Nigeria's two main cities, Abuja and Lagos, are preparing to go on lockdown to help prevent the spread of the coronavirus. The arrival of coronavirus testing kits donated by a Chinese billionaire is expected to give officials a more accurate reading of coronavirus infections in Africa's most populous nation. But there are also concerns on how the public could react to a jump in infection numbers and a lockdown. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The lockdown announcement was made during President Muhammadu Buhari's national broadcast. Normal activities in Lagos, Abuja, and Ogun near Lagos are expected to shut down for 14 days, starting late Monday night.
Some of these measures will surely cause major inconveniences to many citizens, but these are sacrifices we should all be willing and ready to make for the greater good of our country.
Hours after the announcement, thousands of citizens stormed shopping malls in Abuja in what appears to be panic buying. Abuja residents like Daniel Yerima say the shutdown is a necessary move to control the coronavirus from spreading.
Personally, I think it's long overdue, and I'm not really satisfied with how the government has been handling the whole situation. But with the president eventually coming out to announce a lockdown, I think it's a beautiful decision, and I hope that this decision would help us control the situation on ground.
However, he has some concerns.
I don't believe many citizens can stay remain indoors for 2 weeks. It's not possible because the majority of the citizens live below the poverty line. Even 1 week, it's not possible for them to remain indoors for 1 week without any income.
Since new testing kits donated by Chinese billionaire Jack Ma arrived in Nigeria last week, more testing has been carried out and more cases discovered. Chinwe Ochu is the head of prevention programs at NCDC. She says the kits are essential to containing the virus.
Our objective is to stop transmission. And to do this, we want to have early detection of cases, early reporting, early case investigation, isolation and treatment, early contact tracing, and early social distancing.
With more than 100 confirmed cases of the virus in Nigeria so far, authorities are working hard and say they are ready to impose even more drastic measures if need be in order to control the spread. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
People living in Ghana's major cities are waking today to restrictions announced by President Nana Akufo-Addo to control the spread of the coronavirus pandemic. Affected cities in the two-week restriction include the nation's capital, Accra, as well as Tema and Kumasi, identified by authorities as coronavirus hotspots. Authorities say Ghana has so far recorded 150 confirmed cases of the disease, with 5 deaths so far. VOA's Peter Clottis spoke with Lillian Adu, the country director for the United Nations Youth in the capital, Accra.
In a nutshell, I would say that Ghanaians have really compromised in the decision that the president made for the partial lockdown to be implemented. We were all expecting this. A lot of Ghanaians were calling for this. So when the president came out to announce this, they all thought that this was a very good initiative. I'll also recommend the media. The media has done very well. Information has really gone down, and people are really even treating this as if it was a total lockdown. Ghana is very quiet and very calm, and I believe that the military will also come out and ensure that the few ones that might come out and be naughty will be controlled. So far, so good in Ghana.
How are the security operatives, including the police and the military, enforcing this restriction?
Yeah, the police and the military are doing very well. Soldiers were even dispatched to Kumasi yesterday, and they have been placed on all the major highways and in between different cities and across the country. So far, everything has been calm. I have been told from reliable sources that when you step out and you see some of them, they ask you where you're going. And if it's not too far, some of them take it upon themselves to dispatch you to make sure that you're really going to either the pharmacy or your medical practitioner, going to the hospital and all of that. Even this 2 hours ago, it has come to our notice that a team of police has impounded a Kia truck full of people trying to escape to Wale Wale, and they've really stopped them. Yeah, they are doing a good job.
I understand your organization is also planning to supply some food items to prisons beginning Tuesday. Talk to me about it.
Today, Tuesday, the United Nations Youth Association Ghana will start distributing sanitizers, liquid soap, and food items to a lot of cells across the country. One of the things that we've been doing is encourage young people to believe in volunteerism and giving back to society. So through these crucial times, we have been talking to people to support us. We've been gathering all these items. In collaboration with some of our partners, we will be dispatching most of these items to the VIP buses across the country, where our regional coordinators and our youth MPs will supervise the distribution of these things. There are lots of street people who are going through tough times through these crucial times, and we want to support them.
Lillian Adu is country director of the United Nations Youth in the Ghanaian capital, Accra. She was speaking to viewers Peter Clotin. The prison population in Cameroon, already squeezed into overcrowded and unsanitary spaces, is extremely vulnerable to the risks posed by COVID-19. Ilaria Allegrozzi, senior Central African researcher at Human Rights Watch, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the issue.
I remember having visited myself a couple of prisons in Cameroon a couple of years ago, including the central prison in Yaoundé. And I can tell you that the situation is catastrophic. The prison in Yaoundé, the central prison, now holds over 5,000 detainees, while it was built for less than 1,000. So detainees are piled on top of each other. They are squeezed like sardines in very, very small cells. They have no air, no adequate ventilation. They sleep on the floor. Sometimes they even take turns to sleep because there's not enough space.
Are many of these cases as well, in fact, pre-trial detentions? And so these prisoners haven't even been to trial yet?
Absolutely. The majority of the prisoners are on pre-trial detention. And this is not only in Yaoundé, but it's across Cameroon. So that's why it's even more important to take some measures in order to decongest the prisons because of the risk posed by the virus.
And what are, in Cameroon, have the authorities responded to any of these concerns from human rights groups?
The authorities have taken some measures to address the risk of the virus spreading in prisons. They have limited prison visits. They have asked visitors to wash their hands. But, lawyers and family members of the detainees told us that this can't be enough. And, for example, they told us that guards are still moving around without any protection. And that's why we have urged the authorities to take some extra measure to face the risk of the pandemic spreading in prisons.
Pandemics and epidemics often kind of shine a spotlight on underlying issues that a society has already has ignored maybe for too long. And, does this kind of spotlight the fact that the prison system in a lot of these countries where the quote unquote democracies don't necessarily function the way they are constitutionally laid out to, let's say, that spills over the justice system?
I mean, this crisis indeed is exacerbating, but there have been other key events which have exacerbated also this situation. I mean, like, that the prisons in Cameroon are in a catastrophic situation is a fact. And this crisis, as well as the mass arrests of people, for example, those suspected of supporting the separatists in the Anglophone regions, or those suspected of collaborating with Boko Haram, have indeed exacerbated the situation because the prisons are overcrowded and, because medical care is almost non-existent, because hygiene is very poor.
That was Ilaria Allegrozzi, senior Central Africa researcher for Human Rights Watch. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from London. The Liberian Senate yesterday, Monday, began the confirmation hearing of the new head of the National Elections Commission of Liberia. President George Weah recently nominated Councillor Ndubuisi Mwabudiki to chair the Elections Commission after only serving months as chair of the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission. But Mr. Mwabudiki's nomination has drawn mixed reviews, as some say he is a naturalized Liberian and should not head the nation's Elections Commission. As Moses Garcia will report from Monrovia, there was a dramatic confirmation hearing yesterday, Monday.
I, A. Ndubuisi Mwabudike, chairman designate for the National Election.
That was Councillor Ndubuisi Mwabudike being administered the oath just before his public confirmation proceedings began Monday in the joint chambers of the legislature. First, Mr. Mwabudike confirmed he was a naturalized Liberian and defended why he is best suited to chair the National Elections Commission.
Let me submit again that I am a citizen of Liberia. The question of my citizenship has been settled in the Supreme Court opinion that admitted me to Supreme Court bar. I believe that I am competent.
Mr. Mwabudike said he has all it takes as a citizen of Liberia to hold positions after being cleared by the Supreme Court bar of the Republic of Liberia to practice. He also said he would have rejected the position if it were proven that his nomination had violated the Constitution of Liberia.
I will be the first person to say to you that I'm not qualified to hold this position if in any way I believe that holding that position will be a violation of any of our laws.
But the chair of the Senate Committee on Elections, Milton Tiaje, said Mr. Mwabudike's presentation did not include his naturalization papers even after those had been requested. Former Senate Pro Tempore Amajala then called for the proceedings to be suspended.
In the absence of proof of citizenship of the witness, our effort at this hearing might be in vain. The fundamental document that should be required is the proof of citizenship of the witness. I would suggest to the chairman to request that document for tomorrow. When the document is reviewed, the hearing with the chairman designated can continue. I submit, sir.
After 5 minutes, Mr. Mwabudike made available what appeared to be a copy of his naturalization papers, but the committee co-chair Henry Yeller said he was somewhat disappointed.
With everything you heard, people challenge your nationality everywhere. You can hear, man, you could not bring your copy of your certificate clear as you're relying that you are Liberian.
Senator Vani Shemo questioned the legibility of the documents, saying there was a contradiction in age.
Now, if you were born 1965, and then you say you got certificate of naturalization in 1982, then you are what? 17 years old. No person shall file a petition for naturalization unless he shall have attained the age of 21 years. There is absolutely no exception.
Senator Sherman argued that Mr. Mwabudike holds allegiance to Nigeria based on the proposition in the Nigerian constitution that all born in Nigeria are citizens of that country. Given all this, pundits are asking how then did Mr. Mwabudike got confirmed by the Senate on two different occasions as chair of the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission and also the Governance Commission. Moses Gazio, VOA News, Monrovia.
That's it for this Tuesday, March 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bongo flavor to sukus, Afrobeat and dumbolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.